Hey,
I've got my article in front of me. Like.
Huh?
We've got a slight delay between the two of us, by the way, so we have to manage that. They're like, it's about half a second.
I'll just talk very slowly and point at you before we start talking.
I'll give you the time.
Hey, Risto here at George Mason University. Today we are talking with Dr. Barry Gordon, who is a senior lecturer in health and physical education at Victoria University in Wellington, New Zealand. We are going to discuss his article titled An Alternative Conceptualization of the Teaching Personal and Social Responsibility Model, so TPSR. You can find the full site of the article in the notes. Barry, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Kia ora, Risto. Thank you for inviting me. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And if our conversation before was as good as it's going to be here, we're going to have a great, great chat about TPSR. So TPSR has come up on this podcast before. Paul Wright and Kevin Richards have done some episodes. We've also talked about the TEAR, which is a way to assess TPSR. Other people have come on and talked about personal and social responsibility. But maybe we can start with just having you give a brief overview of the model and maybe talk about what attracts you to this model. Why are you engaged in research in TPSR?
Thanks. Well, firstly, the interesting thing to me was that I knew nothing of the model until I taught physical education for many years, and then I'd gone to Ohio State to do my master's. So I'm a Buckeye. That was way back, and then came back and got into what we in those days were called teaching colleges. And at that point, I knew very, very little about it. I was already a year into my PhD on a topic nothing to do with TPSR. And then Don and Dave, Don Hallison and Dave Walsh turned up to do a circuit around New Zealand. And immediately, it was within an hour of listening to them, that I changed my PhD topic and dived into TPSR. And I think that the thing that struck me was a couple of things. The first was simply what Don talked about, what's important in your professional life, and it's written that as well. And I felt like if I looked at myself and I was at the start of the career, you know, what was important? And then I realized, you know, this is a child-centered approach, and it was value-based. Making better kids will make better people. And while that sounds a bit sort of cheesy, the reality was I thought that was important. And I also really liked the fact that you had twin goals. So, you know, you could, Don was quite strong on this, that you maintained the integrity of, if you were in basketball or whatever the sport context, kids be taught to be really good at basketball as well. But the parallel to that, to these values goals, so it made sense to me. I like the framework. And yes, much to the upset of my PhD supervisor, I went and changed completely as I was a year into it. So it's quite a big thing, as he said to me.
Yeah. Well.
But yes, that was the approach. Those are the things that really appealed to me. I was immediately attracted to it.
Yeah, and it is a really attractive model because of exactly what you said, that dual purpose. It comes with, you're still teaching physical education. The bulk of that lesson is about teaching skills, and so you're not reinventing the wheel there. But it also talks about, you know, making or facilitating better students and making a lifelong impact. And I think we'll talk to that transfer piece a little bit, because that is a huge part in your reconceptualization. You kind of put that at the center. But can you talk to me about the idea of labeling the values of TPSR as cumulative levels? Because in the paper, you talk about the benefits of having those cumulative levels, like you are going to step one, then after that, step two, then step three. And what are the implications of that? Like, are there issues with labeling those levels?
Well, yeah, the first thing is that the idea of level one, level two, or even level zero being cumulative is really traditional. It's really well established, and that's a strength in one way, because it gives people a common terminology. You know, if I meet somebody, we're talking, I was working on level three, then self-direction, then like, we sort of know what it means. So I think there's a traditional bit there, which is important. The teachers, I think that they like a framework, because one of the worries in TPSR for some teachers is that it's less structured. You just come back and you're giving power, empowering the students a little bit, and that can be a little bit scary. And so to have a framework of levels helps give that some structure. So I think that's important for them. And it means that you can talk in more discrete units. So when it, we're talking about effort, making a good effort, trying new things, etc. There are some positives about it. For me, the major negative, and some of the research seems to indicate this, is that many teachers particularly would consider that you work on one, and then when that's been achieved, you work on two and three and four. And that sounds pretty linear, but and it's in the reality of practice, it's not that linear, but that's the concept behind it. And for me, the particular worry always was that there's been quite a bit of research where transfer is ignored, really. It's a nice to have, I think I wrote in my article. If you believe that you're really working on these other values or levels, and then you start talking about transfer, I think the essence of the model can be lost. Again, in the article, I quote Don Hallison a couple of times where he talks about the importance of transfer being the essence of the whole model. That's what it's about. It's not working in the classroom or the club or whatever. And so there really, I think there really is a risk that if you leave, you talk about transfer as level five, that you may ignore it. Whereas, as we'll talk about later, there's reconceptualization that transfer becomes. And I know that many, maybe not teachers, but some of the academics, someone like Dave Walsh has always talked about transfer being central, but he will work on transfer from day one of his programs. Those are the advantages, but the disadvantage for me was that people may leave some opportunities behind because they've got this mindset of stepping up the ladder, so to speak.
So what is your model, like this new alternative conceptualization that you wrote about? How do the values and goals look like in a sports program? Or can you kind of explain what that in the paper is figure one, where there's this big transfer in the very, very center of the model? Can you explain that?
So the way I put it together, it doesn't change the model. I think it actually, in many ways, illustrates the model more correctly, or more in line with what Don would have thought. And so there's three or four things. The first thing is that transfer, as you mentioned, is in the middle. And so that transfer becomes part of everything. If we took a really simple example, if on day one, you turn up in my class and the first time in our class, you show some respect. You've been a pain all the time, and now that you show a bit of respect, allow me to teach. That could be, the second day. That moment, I should take the opportunity to talk to you and say that's great. Have you enjoyed the class more than when you're causing problems? Have you thinking how do you think it will go if you try it in maths or whatever? So immediately you are talking transfer, and within the classroom or within the club, you talk transfer every day. And I've got some. I think we're talking later about the suggestions. So that's the first thing, is that we place transfer as the most important part of it, central part of it. And we've also got two ways of transfer. So we always talk about transfer, what we do in our club and what it's like when we go to the home or to work or classroom or out on the playground. But there's also the transfer that comes back to the program and often acknowledged. So here it's decide that he wants to try and make a really big effort, and he goes home and he makes an effort with mum doing stuff, caring, it's absolutely rewarded for it, his thanks, everything else. So that transfer back will encourage him to continue developing in the TPSR program. If, however, you go back out and you try something and your friends tease you, what are you doing, give you a really hard time about being a goody goody guy and all this stuff in America, then that's a negative transfer back. So you may actually come back to this class less inclined to take on board stuff. some of these values and some of the talking about. So it's quite important that we, and later on when we talk about suggestions, is that we address the issues of what happens when we want them to transfer out, but what happens when that happens, take it to a new context, plan for that transfer later. So the transfer is the centre. The other, and two ways, and the other thing is that we've got the values or slash levels, self-direction, respect, effort, caring, leadership, etc. They are not, they are floating. So we don't say we should start with one or start with the other, and in one session we may actually address caring and effort or respect and caring. And part of that was, when I was working with students years ago, we were looking at in those days levels, and the student said to me, why isn't caring level one? Isn't that fundamental to everything else? And I said, oh, actually, that's absolutely reasonable. And that's when we started looking at it and thinking, maybe we have it in that structure. And I think the other thing is that sometimes with respect and effort are sort of more traditional sort of things we would expect in a classroom. Sometimes that's where the teachers stop. That's where they're really encouraged and they're pretty happy at that point. So, yeah, there's several reasons, but I certainly have got these values just moving around and they're not fixed and there's no set order which you would introduce or whatever. And you've got transfer as a central part of it. So those are the two major differences.
And that choice of what is covered is then left up to the teacher, essentially, right? Or the coach of what are you choosing to address more today instead of whereas a traditional model, you'd start at the bottom and then you'd work yourself up. So is that right? So the choice becomes on the teacher, how they're planning their lesson, what are they focusing on, one or two parts of it, or...
And, you know, there's two or three things. One is that the choice is pragmatic to the degree that you don't want to overload day one, guess what, we're doing all four of these plus the different transfer. So, yes, there's a pragmatic response that you don't want to... You know, the kids say it's an after-school basketball program. They want to learn basketball, as we talk. So that's important. That's twin goals. And so you slowly bring it in. But the model has always been reactive to the context. So... depending on the context, you know, the first thing you might need to do is talk about respect, because they're not respecting you enough to even start to teach, and not respecting each other to learn, whatever. Or it could be that, you know, there's a real need for develop some empathy among the class, bullying and whatever. So that may be where you start with.
Mm-hmm.
So you react to the context, but you're also pragmatic within the realities of what you don't want to turn the kids off within, you know, the first hour or two by talking.
Yeah,
they have to be physically active. That's the whole.
Right.
Yeah. So it's reacting to what's happening in front of you.
Yeah. So what are some of the suggestions you can bring up for teachers and coaches to adopt to start facilitating transfer in practice?
Okay. So the first one we've talked about, and that is that you introduce transfer at the start of the program, and you continue doing it throughout. So. You know, what we're learning in this program is really going to be useful for us in the class and physical education, but you know, also it can be valuable for you outside of the classroom. At the really start, so you sow the seed, you establish that transfer is that transfer is what you're going to be looking at. And then what I find personally, I think other teachers, other coaches will do the same, is that you get into the excitement of the class or the coaching session, and then you forget some of these things. So I suggest that there's some sort of monitoring of yourself, just to ensure that you do mention transfer more than once, and do it, and then, you know, dive into the session or whatever. And that can be some sort of systematic way, just every, you know, there's a checklist that you could use or whatever suits you. And then actually think about how you incorporate transfer into the awareness talk or the reflections or the discussions afterwards, and actually plan for that. And again, you know, we're not talking intensive or extensive stuff, but just keeping that awareness going. And the example I used in here in the article was around something as simple as caring. You know, you've been talking about caring and it's going well, and you're asking it and say, you know, who's helped somebody in the class today without being asked. then say, okay, so what about outside the class? Who's helped somebody without being asked, and just because it's helpful, and outside of the classroom in the last week, for example, who's helped your mother at home, or sorry, your mom at home? Or, you know, you can take it the next stage. Let's think about it. Next week in the list, I'm going to ask you about if you had the opportunity. And it's that constant, without going on and on and on, but just that constant reinforcing about the fact that, you know, transfer is really what we're doing. A sentence here, a sentence there, checking up here. The other one I sort of talked about is the fact that it's planning for transfer. So preparing participants for transfer so that we look at what's happening in their lives. And we can say, you know, the example I used was if you make a big effort at maths and your friends will tease you, Dennis is out of the article, then you can talk to them about it and say, okay, so you know, you're really enjoying the fact that you're trying new things, making a good effort and you're persistent. You want to try it in another class. What will happen there, do you think? If they say, oh, my friends might tease me for being, you know, goody good. Okay, so that's quite possible. How are you going to react to that? How are you going to react? What are you going to do about that? Because if they, you don't want that negative transfer coming back in. You also want the kids to think about what benefit would be for them too. So, you know, so you're going to really make a good effort in maths. Really working stuff you're not, you know, struggling with, being persistent. You know, how's it going to help you? What's the benefit? So they can start to think ahead that it's a benefit. And then the other thing is that you want them to believe that they can do it. So you need to support them. You can do this in maths, whatever it is. So if you're actually making transfer important, but you're also doing some planning and some pre-work to help them be successful when they do transfer it out. I won't mention it now, but we'll come back to it later. And that's one of the interesting things that you find about that is that do it successfully, you need to have an understanding of the life outside of your classroom and the context of whether it be a club or classroom. I apologise, I keep talking classrooms, but, you know. There's this thing I think you've heard about called transformative SEL, which is this idea that we have to now move, and I'll come back to it, but move systems about TPSR into looking at the systemic problems that are out there that these kids are they going to address them rather than simply hearing them as that. And I think that's one of the next directions. Those I think we'll talk about later, but those are the things that we're talking about that you can do in a classroom or in a club.
So I guess the question is, if I'm thinking about a teacher who does TPS already in that more the original idea of it, and I think you did a great job putting in quotes from Don Helsin of, you know, explaining that he has considered these levels, but in his context he decided that that was what he's kind of going to stick with, and there were research articles that have published throughout since he's published this model first that kind of critique that. So let's say you're giving advice to a person who knows the TPSR model. They've been going through the cumulative levels. So what are kind of like the challenges that you would see or the implications, like what would change in their class if they went in and adopted this new idea of it and started transfer at the very beginning and throughout?
Yeah. So the first thing is that I've actually been working this way with schools and so forth for a while before I wrote the article. The overwhelming response, I thought there'd be problems with teachers who were already doing it because I didn't think they'd want to change. But the overwhelming response was this makes absolute sense. And so for those teachers, it wasn't the challenge that I thought it would. And I think if you, there was a, the TPSR Alliance had a, podcast just recently with Australia and New Zealand primary school, elementary school teachers who are doing TPSR. And it was interesting that they all talked without even thinking about it, of values and of transfer being the centre, and these values being, they one of them did, who had been doing it for a long time, about levels. So I honestly thought that it would be problematic. keen to. I guess the only thing that comes up, and most of the students, the teachers I'm working with are teachers who are encouraging to come and do the work. Sometimes the teachers who are well established, who are comfortable with the levels, they've got the post, or they're not really addressing transfer, but they're very happy because the classrooms are so much better behaved, the relationships are so much better, they're getting more work done. That it's a reassessing of that whole, the essence of what they're doing can be a bit too much of a challenge. And there was some that been a little reactive against saying, oh, that's going really, really well, this is perfect. I sort of felt that like some of them might be thinking I was criticising them. I wasn't. But they did feel a bit slightly defensive, some of them. But yeah, in general, it's been, oh, hey, that makes perfect sense. Because they can, you know, if they chose to, the values are floating, so they could follow the same sequence if that's what suits their classroom or not. But that essence of, you know, this is, we're doing it for your classroom, but you're trying to get it to move outside the classroom or their pub is important. And that's the, yeah. So, yeah, to sum it up, I was surprised. I thought there would be more challenges than there were.
Yeah. And honestly, when I read this and I looked at this model and the way you explain it, that was my reaction. I was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. Like, why keep the transfer at the very end if that's your ultimate goal? If that's the highest level that you want to get to, wouldn't you want to kind of introduce it at the very beginning, even if it's not like the one thing that you're trying, you're not going to do transfer only, but through other, you know, through physical activity, through awareness talks, you're talking about transfer from the bottom up. I'm saying bottom up, but I don't mean that, because I mean your little circle in the middle. I'm making hand gestures pointing to your figure one on an audio podcast that nobody can see here. But I do recommend that people who are listening go to this paper to read for yourself, to kind of reimagine or rethink the way that you're approaching this, because like you said, it makes a lot of sense to me. So moving forward a little bit, I have one last question for you, and it's a little bit unrelated to what we've been talking about, TPSR. But you recently published a book. The title of the book is Tactical Decision Making in Sport: How Coaches Can Help Athletes to Make Better In-Game Decisions. The book is on developing thinking players. So I'm wondering if you can share a little bit about this book, this model, just in general, and what kind of led you down this route.
Sure. So the book has been edited by myself and David Cooper from Canada. Before we started this, we were talking baseball. And so that's where it all came from, actually, because as I say, I was at Ohio State, and then I was with Paul Wright in Illinois for a while, and became really a Boston Red Sox fan, of all things. Working it through, thinking about it, and I've been playing with some other stuff around how to teach games. And it suddenly occurred, I was reminded of that when Thorpe came out to New Zealand many years ago. He talked a number of times about how we lose the power of tactical decision making and actually getting tactics. That's something that we push aside and be because we're teaching rules and so forth. So this is a sort of another version of the teaching game for understanding. It certainly comes from that era. But the idea is simply that you teach quite sophisticated tactics and develop the decision making through using modified games. We simplify the equipment, simplify the actual rules of the game, but you're focusing on tactics and decision making. So one of the chapters on there is softball, baseball, and so you can use small areas, but they're throwing softballs, but you're running quite complicated, you know, runners on two and three, one out, top of the fourth. That's not, we're going to start with that, but to get to that, and you're leading by three, what's the best outcome that you could hope for? And so the players will really think about it, make their decisions. But they're always working with the confidence that they're not going to get a hard hit ball to them. And those things. And so, yeah, it's an interesting thing. I've used it for a number of different activities. Take some invasion games, and actually some target games too. But you know, the whole basis is that kids can be attracted and interested in developing a really good sense of the game through tactics, advanced tactics, and that requires decision making around those games. So that's one level, and then there's a few chapters in there around that, around the model itself, and then there's softball, baseball, and touch, which is a New Zealand game, which I'm not sure how many of the national audience will know about. Australasians will. And then we also got 13, in total, 13 sports. So they range from that good traditional American game, netball, which is Canadian and Australasian. Football, which is soccer, and also football, Canadian football, which is sort of your football, ice hockey, volleyball, cricket, squash, karate, which is an unusual one. And all of them are experienced coaches who have been asked to talk about how they, that's in the sports, but how they develop tactical awareness and decision making, good decision making in their particular sport. And there's all sorts of difference there. And then the front line is more of theoretical aspects of decision making in sports, the theories behind how, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a theoretical basis in the first part. There's a good solid 13 different activities in sports. That's with an experienced coach, and then it finishes off with a more of a sort of a rounding off of it. So yeah, it's so far it seems to be going really well.
So I caught the karate part there, and I'm interested in that because I wrestled at the university level, and then I coached at the university level for 5 years in the U.S. And so, you know, I'm really into wrestling now, more into jiu-jitsu, and it's really, really tactical. And you know, my head wrestling coach when I was in college, and who I then coached with, was a couple-time NCAA champion. You know, like a really, really, really highly intelligent wrestler. And what he was always preaching was that you have to know how to think in these situations and not just be a robot that does moves really, really well. It's not just repetition of doing this attack, this attack, this attack. And when I was wrestling, that was my, like, I just drilled and drilled and drilled and drilled and drilled and made sure that I knew what to do. And I had a game plan. And it was, if this is game plan number one, if that gets shut down, this is my number two. And if that gets shut down, this is my number three.
Yeah.
But they were always shut down in specific ways. And I remember vividly in my senior year, in one of my last matches, that I couldn't think through a solution while the match was going. I was in a point that I would have had to go back and watch videotape and analyze and figure out what was going. So I never achieved what the goal was of being a thinker during that activity. I won some matches, maybe some matches I shouldn't have based on how I was performing. But at the end of the day, when I became a coach, the light went off. I was like, oh, I was... And I kind of put that as, like, I was so pressured as an athlete to win or not get embarrassed. And I was so caught up in that versus where you see elite athletes who are innovative and creative and make these amazing plays in whatever sport they're doing, is because they're thinking. It's not like they're all of a sudden just randomly doing something. They're like, I think this can work. And if it doesn't work, I have an answer to that and that and that and that. So I think it's one of the things that I feel is very limited is in these combative sports, how much tactics is actually in there, but we don't talk about that because we don't have people who are teaching that at the K to 12, you know, elementary, secondary level, because like karate or boxing or wrestling or jiu-jitsu, there's sports that have been around for hundreds of years, yet they're not often taught in schools. They're not often taught in schools in the U.S. because we fear that you're going to get sued, you know? And if you do get past that, you don't have the, like, they're very, very tough skills to learn. So it's not as easy as, you know, learning how to kick a soccer ball and going in and showing somebody that's 3 years old, this is how you kick a soccer ball. You could pick that up in a weekend if you need. So.
It's interesting that, isn't it? Because, yeah, it's a bit like the TPSR where, you know, people assume the values would be developed, you know, this character development just by being participating. But in actual fact, you discover that you do need a framework and actually be explicit, you know, that safe network or whatever. That's good. Yeah. And so too with the thinking. You know, we think that players will learn to think because they play lots of games. But we've all played with players who have played for 30 years and still haven't learned to think at all. They just react. But it can be generated. It can facilitate the ability to be better thinking players. And David Cooper, who's the other editor, his pivotal moment as he was a squash coach was that and he writes in the book about how he had a really good squash player and came to the big final of the competition and he couldn't be there. He had a wedding or whatever. When he came back, she had lost and she should have won. And he said, "So what happened?" She said, "Oh, you weren't there to tell me what to do." And he said, just hit him, you know, it was just like a, oh my goodness. So that's when his interest in actually targeting, facilitating, developing the ability to think and make good decisions, and part of what he did. So that's how we did it, really.
And part of that style of coaching is the video game coaching. Like you're there hitting the controller, making the player do things, and when you don't have that controller with you, it's not working. Whereas I think the scary analogy is the artificial intelligence. You're like programming that being, that performer, to think for themselves. So when you're no longer making those moves for them. And I was there as an athlete too. I would always look to my corner and like ask, what am I doing wrong? How do I fix this? And I was always looking for that answer. And you know, there are times in hectic tournaments when the coach doesn't get there right away, and you look in your corner, you go, oh crap, here we go. Like I have
I'm
to
in
think for
trouble.
myself, you know? So, but.
Yeah, I mean, writing the book was fascinating. Listening to those, you know, getting the feedback from different coaches. Just like you, I've never thought of the wrestling thing before. So, can I ask, have you watched Return of the Boom as a
No,
wrestler?
I have not. What is that?
Have a look. You,
How do I not know
it's
that?
on Netflix.
Okay, I'll
You have
have to
no
look it
idea.
up. I'll have to look it up.
It's a comedy, and I'll think about when you're watching those kids. I think about yourself. I'll be thinking about you being. He was a wrestling coach. He comes back anyway.
Okay. Is
Yeah,
that
as
official?
soon as
Is
you said
that an
wrestling, right?
official endorsement of Return of the Boom?
Absolutely, you'll
Okay.
love it.
All right, I'll go check it out.
I think it's Return of the Boom, something like Move the Boom, but the Boom was his wrestling name at college. Anyway, yeah, so, the whole thing has been really fascinating, that book. It really has, because, you know, I was just, as a personally, you know, my own sporting career, I'm thinking about the bad decisions, the good decisions, but also looking for that, just like you did, you know, that someone to say it was okay, or to tell me what to do in that situation. And yet it's the really good players who do the unexpected, make those decisions that are, you know, just a bit different. But that, yeah. And then going with it. And some of the players, I think, are quite happy for somebody else to make the decision, even if they think it's wrong for them. Because if it goes bad, they can blame, well, you know, it was Rousseau who told me to. My fault. So, yeah. And you can get very, very complicated situations going, you know. And let's go back to the baseball one. Just with kids, normal kids trying to work out, you know, which is the best throw, where to go to. There's another book that's I've done, and I'm not promoting it here, but it's Developing Thinking Players Through Baseball Softball. And that has a whole series of scenarios where you get the kids to play with them, play the scenario out, and then decide 3-1 points for best result batting team, best result fielding team, and so forth. But again, you reduce it down to hitting off a tee or even throwing a ball rather than having it. So it's an absolute focus on tactical. And I find it's mostly the students I've worked with and really, really enjoy it. And often it's the kids who aren't particularly physically able, you can physically contribute.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Barry. I appreciate you coming on and chatting about the new model, the reconceptualized model, and then about your book as well. So I think they're both great resources. I'll link to both in the show notes and people can look at those. So thanks for coming on. And I'm glad we got to span, I think, about 15 time zones. So appreciate it.
We finally worked it out. Yeah. No problems. And enjoy the movie.
Yep. Return of the Boom. All the listeners, go watch the Return of the Boom and report back.
Better double check it. Something the Boom. I think it's Return. It might be Here Comes the Boom. Something
yeah.
like that.
We'll put Boom in the Netflix queue.
Yeah.
Thanks, Barry.
You're in. Thanks.
If you're still listening, you're probably really into health and physical education. So I'm going to use this opportunity to pitch our master's program to you if you don't have your master's degree yet. Our 100% online master's degree program we offer at George Mason is affordable. You can do it while teaching, and it's high quality. Mason was listed as one of the top 50 universities under 50 years old in the world. Our education department was ranked in the top 10 nationally for the online master's degree program in curriculum and instruction. The master's degree revolves around your teaching. So you'll use assignments from the classes to immediately apply research and best practices to your classes. You'll be part of a tight-knit cohort of health and physical education professionals who are passionate about teaching. You're also gonna get an opportunity to interact with students in other content areas. So if you're interested, you can email me, look me up on Twitter, or you can go on the hpewebsite.com under Study With Us and watch a video that I've made.